I asked Maury why he hadn't moved somewhere else when he was younger.
Where?
He said. I don't know, South America, New Guinea, someplace not as selfish as America.
Every society has its problems,
Maury said, lifting his eyebrows, the closest he could come to a shrug.
The way to do it, I think, is not to run away. You have to work at creating your own culture. Look, no matter where you live, the biggest deficit we human beings have is our short-sightedness. We don't see what we could be. We should be looking at our potential, stretching ourselves into everything we can become. But if you're surrounded by people who say, I want mine now, you end up with a few people with everything, and a military to keep the poor ones from rising up and stealing it.
Maury looked over my shoulder to the far window. Sometimes you could hear a passing truck or a whip of the wind. He gazed for a moment at his neighbor's houses. Then he continued.
The problem, Mitch, is that we don't believe we are as much alike as we are. Whites and blacks, Catholics and Protestants, men and women. If we saw each other as more alike, we might be very eager to join in one big human family in this world and to care about that family the way we care about our own. But believe me, when you are dying, you see it is true. We have all the same beginning, birth, and we all have the same end, death. So how different can we be? Invest in the human family. Invest in people. Build a little community of those you love and who love you.
He squeezed my hand gently. I squeezed back harder. And like that carnival contest where you bang a hammer and watch the disc rise up the pole, I could almost see my body heat rise up Maury's chest and neck into his cheeks and eyes. He smiled.
In the beginning of life, when we are infants, we need others to survive, right? And at the end of life, when you get like me, you need others to survive, right?
His voice dropped to an even lower whisper.
But here's the secret. In between, we need others as well.
Later that afternoon, Connie and I went into the bedroom to watch the O.J. Simpson verdict. It was a tense scene as the principals all turned to face the jury. Simpson in his blue suit, surrounded by his small army of lawyers, the prosecutors who wanted him behind bars just a few feet away. When the foreman read the verdict, not guilty, Connie shrieked, "Oh my God!" We watched as Simpson hugged his lawyers. We listened as the commentators tried to explain what it all meant. We saw crowds of blacks celebrating in the streets outside the courthouses and crowds of whites sitting stunned inside restaurants. The decision was being hailed as momentous, even though murders take place every day. Connie went out in the hall. She'd seen enough. I heard the door to Maury's study close. I stared at the TV set. Everyone in the world is watching this thing, I told myself. Then from the other room, I heard the ruffling of Maury's being lifted from the chair, and I smiled. As the trial of the century reached its dramatic conclusion, my old professor was sitting on the toilet.